The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you are looking for life and career enhancements, you need experts that have been there, done that, tried, sometimes failed, and ultimately succeeded. Welcome to The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. You may be looking for help with relationships, health and wellness, home life, career, finance, or faith. We hopefully have the answers you are seeking. Now, here is your host, Scott Ventrella.
Welcome to the show. This is Scott Ventrella, and thank you for joining me and us once again. It is that time of the year again. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. You know, you hear all the songs, "Tis the Season to Be Jolly," and all of that. Or is it? You know, think about it. Are you feeling jolly right now? Are you feeling joyful? This is the time of the year where, you know, ideally, and regardless of what your faith background is, or, you know, some people may have no particular faith background, but this generally is the time of the season where we think about peace, we think about connecting with our loved ones, we think about maybe getting a little bit more focused, a little bit more centered, and it should be more of a calming period of time. Of course, two of the biggest holidays during this month are Hanukkah and Christmas, of course, and there are still others. Like I said, most people, though, let me ask you this. So are you feeling that, you know, a little bit more relaxed, a little bit more peaceful during this time? I know many people do try to take the time to again, find that centered, that center and that calm center, and be a little bit more, let's say, again, relaxed for this time of the year. But I my guess is, and I'm going to speak for myself, is that that often doesn't happen. It seems like people get a little bit, are more stressed out, are more anxious, are more frazzled, and running around like crazy. It seems almost to be a contradiction of sorts. But we're going to try to dig into this today, and I think there are a lot of different reasons for it. I think we are all well-intentioned, and I'm saying we because I'm throwing myself right into the mix there. I think, you know, we all want to be more centered and more calm, more relaxed, more connected, focus on relationships, focus on our faith, but things tend to get in the way, and I think there are a lot of different reasons for that, which is why our first guest, we'll actually have two guests today, but our first guest, Mitzi Weinman, is the owner and founder of Time Finder, and she also recently published a book. It's called It's About Time. And when I think about, you know, some of the reasons why I'm not more relaxed, more calm, more focused during this time of the year is, time seems to get away, and I get kind of a little bit caught up behind in things, and then I'm rushing, maybe a little procrastination, and then, of course, then things just kind of spiral down from there. So, Mitzi, good morning, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, good to have you. So you heard that introduction. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, everything is because, you know, we can't seem to manage our time, but I do think that there certainly is some kind of a connection, and you seem to have spent quite a bit of time looking into this whole area.
Well, I think that part of the issue is that a lot of folks are trying to manage their time. And so you really can't manage your time.
Well, now that's controversial, though. Whatever happened to time management and the 7 habits of highly effective people? Of course, that was an incredibly best-selling book, and that was a lot of that was about time management. So now you really got my attention. So you can't manage your time. So what do we do?
Well, the thing is that with time, you can't slow it down, you can't speed it up, and you certainly can't stop it. So you can't really manage time. But what you're looking to do is manage yourself and how you react to different situations. So it's really about self-management and how you approach a situation that happens and how you react to that or how you don't react to it, which is actually a reaction to it. So you're really looking at managing yourself because you can manage yourself, but you can't manage something that can't be managed. So when you're trying to manage time and it can't be managed, it's an uphill battle, and so you're struggling already. So if you take a look at how do you approach your day, how do you, you know, somebody comes in and interrupts you at work, or all of a sudden you have a sick child that you need to stay home for or need to make arrangements because you've got some big meeting. It's really how do you react to those situations and how are you self-managing? How are you having putting things in place so when things kind of erupt, you've got sort of some backup? And it's not really being ideal, but it's being realistic. So look at how you can manage yourself and how you approach whatever you're trying to do.
So I love the idea, and I honestly never thought about it this way, the idea that, you know, managing time, because, you know, the clock on the, so the hands on the clock just keep moving along, and a second is still a second, an hour is still an hour. There's still, by the way, only 24 hours in a day. So none of that has changed. And that's kind of what you're saying, aren't you?
Well, that's it. I mean, we all have the same 24 hours in a day. We all have the 168 hours in the week. We all have that same amount. But how come some people seem to be more productive than other people? Now, why might you look at somebody and say, wow, how are they getting all that stuff done? And I just seem to be struggling or I'm procrastinating. So, you know, some people can actually get the things done that they need to get done or get the important things done that they need to get done and don't seem to struggle as much or visibly struggle as much. They could be like that, the duck, you know, the duck on the water, but their feet are paddling really quickly underneath, but you can't see that.
That's interesting. So let me ask you this, and I'd like to, because I think they're all different circumstances, but let me just start with, I do a little bit of work with personality assessments, and of course, I'm sure you're familiar with most of them. The one that I work the most with is Myers-Briggs. And, of course, so they're all, as we all know, you don't need to be an expert to know that we all have, you know, different personalities. And I believe that, you know, some personalities lend themselves to being a little bit more buttoned up, being a little bit more aware of, and realistic, by the way, in terms of how much time it takes to complete a task. And, by the way, this, regardless of whether it's in the workplace or in your personal life. Some people will say when I'm giving them a personality test, they say, well, you know, I'm this way at home, but I'm actually very, very sensitive to time and very timely when I'm in the workplace. And I'll say, well, it's the same personality. It's still you. You've just figured out how to, you know, make an adjustment because for some reason you've convinced yourself that it's more important to be on time, you know, in your workplace, because maybe the consequences are going to be a little bit more severe, or vice versa.
Well, I think that, you know, the personality test gives a lot of, you know, really great information. When I actually work with folks, I'm looking at process. I'm looking at really kind of, you know, I'll ask somebody when I start coaching them, when you come in the morning, how do you know what you're going to do? And I start really looking at that process. I don't really look at the type of personality they are, because if you sit down and you just look at something, you can start to, and you give yourself the time to look at it, you can begin to figure out how much time something's going to take. Or you can estimate and then add maybe a little bit more because of the fact that you might be interrupted quite a bit. So you really can take that step back and look at how you're planning your day, how you're gaining that focus that you need to get. What are you doing to put those things in place? And how do you start to deal and look at the obstacles that are getting in your way? Really look at it more from a process. When I, growing up, my father put a sign on my bedroom door. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Welcome to the gates of hell.
That's great. Well, I'm gonna borrow that.
Well, and the reason was that I didn't, you know, I wasn't very organized. I didn't hang stuff up. I had paper strewn all about. I was truly a procrastinator. I didn't want to, you know, get my school projects done. I really waited till the last minute. So, you know, sometimes people will say to me, you must have been born organized. And I'd laugh because no, not at all. But I've taken that step back and I've looked at, and I started doing that when I went off to college, but I started looking at how can I do things a little bit differently that are going to make things better and easier for me, and so that I feel like I'm on top of what I'm doing. And then throughout school, you know, and then when I ended up going into the workplace, I kept kind of tweaking those strategies and tweaking things. I mean, I used to look at what I needed to do, and I would try to get all the little things done first thing in the morning, because then I would think, oh, I have a big block of time to do my big project. Well, I realized that doesn't work, so I needed to flip it. And what I mean by flip it is that I needed to start my day off doing the priorities and work from higher priorities to lower priorities in my day. And then by the end of the day, I was working on things that were less important. And then it makes it easier to go home. And I don't have as many butting priorities or butting things butting together that might take me away from doing something important. So when I'm working with my clients and when I'm doing speaking or the workshops, that's really one of the key, what you can almost call low-hanging fruit, is to start your day off doing something that's really important, that's a high priority, or that you're dreading to do, because those things that you dread to do will drain your energy and you know that they're there all day. So that's something, and it's a very easy thing for somebody to do, is just plan at the end of the day, the night before, the day before you leave work, take 5 minutes. It's all it takes if you do it consistently every day, 5 minutes or less, and then you kind of put closure to your day. You're less stressed when you get home because you've thought of the things that you need to do the next day. You're not waking yourself up in the middle of the night, sending yourself a text or an email or a voicemail. And then when you come in, you're all set to go with doing something that's important and a high priority that absolutely needs to get done. So not a very difficult thing to do, but truly, well, really effective.
Well, I'm going to make a confession, because it's so funny that I do exactly the opposite of what you're suggesting, and I really hadn't thought about it that way. Because, you know, I think I speak for, I'm not going to say the majority of people, but I think I speak for many people that, you know, in the morning, I want to ease into things. I want to do the low-hanging fruit. I don't want to think too hard. You know, I need to kind of get the engine revving and all of that. And then, I'm being brutally honest. And then, of course, as I start digging into things, and what I'm not anticipating is the over the transom or the unexpected things that kind of come along, where you think, okay, I can tackle this higher priority, this bigger thing later, because I got this big block of time, you know, from 2 to 4 this afternoon, let's say. And then, of course, along the way, what happens? Well, the unexpected happens, and then I find myself at the end of the day jamming, and I'm finding, oh, I wasn't able to get through, you know, the big meaty stuff, and that can be extremely stressful. So what you're stressing, and I want to just kind of as a reminder. Exactly. But the idea that, and I'm just summarizing here, that Missy, you're saying, number one, you know, we really can't manage time, but we can manage ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I really love the idea, because I've got a very strong process background. And I think that brings some hope and relief to many people, because some people say, well, you know, it's the way I'm wired. It's my personality. You know, I know some people that are, you know, again, it's their personality that makes them very, you know, they plan out their day. They have checklists. They make sure they, you know, they understand, you know, how long a certain task might take. But what you're saying is that if you focus on the process, regardless of your personality, that you actually, no matter who you are, you can actually get some sanity around this. And I love the first tip. I'm going to act on that particular tip, where, again, don't just ping off the easy, low priority, the low hanging fruit first thing in the morning. You know, tackle some of the bigger things.
Right, because you can ease into your day, because if you've planned your day, you can ease into it, but you can ease into it before you actually get to your desk or wherever it is you're starting your day. You can ease into it by, you know, listening to the radio if you're driving to work, or having, you know, music on, you know, or read, you know, having a book on that you're listening to when you're taking, you know, public transportation or something, if you've got that near where you are. But you can ease into your day in other ways, but not by not doing the priority. Once you get to where you need to go, you should really just kind of say, okay, and get your head around it, that when you get to work, when you're starting your day, this is really what I'm going to do, and this is really what's important. Because, you know, I would imagine when I will ask people, how many, you know, what, when you have those unexpected happen in your day, you know, how often does that happen? Is it just like once a month, once a week? You know, and everybody says, really, it's like every day. So the thing is, those unexpecteds are really expected, and you have to plan around those. And one of the best ways is to start the day doing that priority. You know, if you wait till 3 o'clock in the afternoon to start it, like you've been doing, but you're not going to do anymore, is that you, all of a sudden, it makes it at 3 or 4 or 5 in the afternoon much more difficult if it's not going as well or something else interrupts you. It makes it much more difficult to stop your day and leave and go home. So you want to just kind of flip what you're doing, and I can't wait to hear how it's working for you.
I agree completely that it is at pretty much every day that there's something that comes up. You know, when you're racing out to get to wherever you've got to get to, an appointment, an interview, your job, and the phone rings or a text comes in where you've got to pick up, you know, your son or your daughter from school because, they're not feeling well. Oh, my gosh. You know, who had planned for something like that? But I think no matter what it is, I do think that I do think it's on a daily basis. So again, another thing to take note of would be, and what you're suggesting is, you really have to kind of build that the unexpected, which really is more or less not the specific issue, but you have to expect that something that was unexpected is going to happen, and build that into your day.
Right, it's having contingency, but you know, kind of contingency plans. The thing is, you don't want to use the personality thing as an excuse for not being able to plan or kind of think through your day. Or I've had a lot of people say, I'm really creative, so, you know, planning like this just doesn't work for my creativeness. Well, I was a dance major, and I choreograph shows, and, you know, I'm quite creative in a lot of different ways. I might not be able to do crafts or paint, but I've got a creative side of me. And so it's not, you know, being creative is not a good excuse either for not really planning and thinking through your day. But a part of what you want to also be able to do is to anticipate things that are going to happen, or to really be a fortune teller. Look into the crystal ball. I carry a crystal ball with me when I do workshops, because you can look into the crystal ball and you can read the future. And so, for example, when you mentioned the parent with the sick child, they get the call. You know, there may be some telltale signs before the child goes to school where they're saying something like they're not feeling good or they didn't sleep very well the night before. So you might think, well, wait a minute, there's a good chance I'm going to get a call today from
right,
the nurse.
Right, right.
And anticipate that, and then figure out what would be my contingency plans if that happens. If I have a spouse, do I talk to my spouse or my partner and say, you know what, if this happens, you might need to be the one to pick up, you know, Johnny at school.
Right, right.
So you look and see what you can actually read and foresee that might happen by anticipating. You can anticipate when you come back from vacation that you're going to be overloaded with a lot of things to catch up on. So leaving yourself a block of time before you get, you know, before you leave, that you're not going to have any meetings or get together with people until after you've kind of gone through your stuff for a couple of hours, is anticipating the fact that you're going to need some time to catch up.
Okay. I apologize for cutting in. It is time for a break, but let's continue with that thought. We're speaking with Missy Weinman. She's the owner and founder of Time Finder. And hey, it's about time. And we're going to After the break, we'll come back and we'll speak more with Mitzi. Thank you very much. We'll be right back right after these messages.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York, Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York, Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from the Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
We all love our best friend, especially when that best friend is a canine best friend. Now there's a show just for the dogs, or the people who love them. Tune in to Dogs Rock Radio with host Pamela Hill. With your stories and advice from the experts, we'll show just how much love and purpose dogs bring to our lives and others around us. You'll also learn about canine fitness, training, and health and wellness. Make Dogs Rock Radio a weekly stop every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back, and we are speaking with Mitzi Weinman. She is the owner and founder of Time Finder and also recently published a fantastic book. It's called It's About Time. By the way, coming up in the next segment, we're going to be speaking with David Palmiter. He's a professor of psychology and counseling at Marywood University. And we're going to be talking about how to handle and respond to holiday stress. But right now, back to not so much managing our time, but managing ourselves in order to, let's say, feel a little bit more relaxed about our day. Mitzi, thank you so much again for being on the show. And so far, you've given, selfishly at least, I've picked up quite a few great tips.
Well, thank you for having me on. I'm still happy to be here.
You say, oh, well, that's good. You say, in some ways, it seems so easy. Just before the break, we were talking about how sometimes the unexpected comes up, and we should anticipate and try to put in some plans. What are some examples of things that come up? We talked about you're racing out the door. You see, or let's say you're getting ready to put Johnny or Janie on the bus, and you notice that they're a little peaked. They say, "Mommy, or Daddy, I don't feel well." But again, what do we do? And as a parent, I can say this: well, no, you look fine. You, because of course it'll disrupt the day. Get on the bus. You look fine. Or you think that they're just playing you because they don't want to go to school for whatever reason. So there's one example. What are some other things that kind of come up unexpectedly, at least in your encounters, in your experience?
So, well, in my book, It's About Time, which has a subtitle, Transforming Chaos into Calm, A to Z. So it's an A to Z book. One of the A chapters, there are two, but the second A chapter is called Anticipate. And so the things that you can anticipate, for example, are busy times of the week, busy times of the month or the quarter or the year. You know, there are times when for accountants it's hugely busy times, you know, tax season, and then there are other times of the year when it's almost as frantic as tax season. The other things you can anticipate, for example, if you've got kids, if the weather's bad, you can anticipate that there is potentially going to be a snow day, and how is that going to impact you. You can anticipate long-winded phone callers. You might know who speaks a very long time and just talks and talks and talks, and so you can put some things in place to say when somebody calls up, hi, you know, I've got about 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and then I've got a meeting to run off to, and start to really kind of take a little bit more control over that phone call. You can anticipate people who are late with deadlines when you know that you need things, but they are consistently late. And if you're going to work on a project with somebody, you can be hopeful that this next project they won't be late with. But it's best to anticipate that they're going to be more difficult to work with still. And so trying to get things earlier on from people, or making sure that the communication is really strong throughout, let's say, the project, that you're staying on top of it and on top of that person, even though you don't want to do that. But if you need to meet a deadline and they're part of that, you need to really put in some actions in place to help you with that. Those are some things. Sending a lot of emails and getting a flurry of email responses back because you sent out a whole lot. You can anticipate that you're going to be having to respond to those emails. Or, a meeting. You go out to a meeting and you can anticipate that you're going to have to do some follow-up for that meeting, and that you're going to might have to get information out to somebody. So you can anticipate those things and start to plan them in your day.
I agree, and you know, it's funny you mentioned that about the emails, because I tend to, you know, given my work schedule, oftentimes when everybody's tucked away and in bed very late at night or in the early wee hours of the morning, I'm cranking out, you know, a bunch of emails, because I find myself more productive at around that time. And then, of course, you know, like you said, I'm not thinking that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to get a lot of responses, and I usually do. So that's a great example. I find another one is that, let's say, you know, when you're driving to a meeting and let's say it's a known route. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm guilty of this, where I think, okay, it takes, let's say 10 minutes, an hour, whatever it might be. In fact, I'm in California a lot for business, and I drive the 405. And I learned this the hard way, by the way. I used to think, okay, you know, and I'm going to leave an hour and I'll add 10%. Well, you know, sometimes things are so unpredictable. I've found that, you know, instead of, sometimes it's taken as much as an hour and a half or an hour and 45 minutes. So what I've done now is I'll allow 2 hours, believe it or not. And some people listening may think, well, that's kind of a waste of time. Well, no, not actually. You know, before that, what I would do is I would be doing busy work or responding to emails, and then I'd get in my car and start driving. And now what I do is I just kind of reverse that. In other words, I just get in my car, and if I get there a half an hour early or even 40 minutes early, well, guess what? Then I can catch up on that other stuff. So for me, that was an important shift. And I think also with technology, you know, we never know what our – this happens a lot, I know, with people where their, you know, their laptop or their computer or their printer, something's on the fritz, and – circumstance that comes up in the course of the day.
You have to have the contingencies in place. I think that the traffic, I live outside of Boston, so, you know, I can't just think that it's going to take me 12 minutes to get into Boston.
Right.
I have to think it's going to take me 12 minutes maybe to get into Boston, but I should listen to the traffic that's on the radio before I go in, you know, have that on so I can hear what kind of traffic I might run into really earlier on before I need to get there. But I also have to think about parking. You know, where am I going to park? How long is it going to take me to park, find a parking space, and then walk to wherever I need to go? And you have to kind of add all of those types of things in. And for the equipment and the technology that can go on the fritz, how awfully frustrating and stressful that is. having contingencies, making sure that you've got your software someplace else so that if you need to, you know, you've got your USB, you've got your stuff backed up, you've got all of those things so that if something does go down, you're not in such dire straits.
And it seems so simple, but the examples that you just gave, it's amazing to me. So just recently, a colleague said, oh my gosh, you know, I can't believe it, my computer, whatever, it just crashed. And I said, well, you know, you had a backup, right? Well, no. And I'm saying, oh my God, I have literally, and this may be a little overkill, but I have two additional backups, one that I keep in my office and one that I keep in my house. And then, of course, I've got everything on two different laptops. So in a sense, I've got three backups. Or with printers, a lot of times it's something as simple as out of paper or out of ink. And so, again, you know, just keeping a little bit of, you know, extra supply. And depending on where you work, obviously, sometimes they get pretty stingy around that. But go ahead, please.
I was going to say, sometimes with things, it's always good to have three things. One
okay.
is the thing that you're, like the printer cartridge, the one that's in the printer. Then you have one, you have two others. So one is that when the one goes out, you can get, you switch it out with the one you've got, the extra in supply, but you still have one in the wings just in case you don't get to the supply place fast enough.
Right, right, exactly. So before we wrap up, I'd love to get your views on. We've been talking a lot about, you know, managing ourselves and thereby, you know, as a byproduct, managing or having greater control over our time in the workplace. What about for the stay-at-home mom or dad or the stay-at-home individual? I would imagine that this is all, you know, this is applicable.
Everything is applicable. It doesn't stop just because you know you're working in an office or a home office, or you're in a cube, or you're in an executive suite. It doesn't matter. It's the same principles. I just recently spoke at a parent conference and talked about the fact that these ideas and these strategies, they're not just ideas, they're really strategies that work, also apply to kids and students. Because you really want your student to do the first thing, the most high priority, the most difficult thing first, and not be up doing homework at 10, 11 o'clock doing their most difficult task. For the stay-at-home person, you really want to be planning your day. You want to be thinking about the things that need to get done, where you need to go, how you're going to get things done, and really, you know, have the to-do list really tied to when you're going to do something. And it's just as important. I remember working with a client, and he was in an office, though, but he said, Mitzi, you know, on Friday, I didn't have anything down on my list to do. And I said, and what did you get done? And he said, nothing.
Right.
And I said, well, there you go. You need to really kind of know what it is that you need to get done. And having that, again, the to-do list really tied to your planner or, you know, Outlook or Google Calendar, makes a difference as to not only what is it that you need to do and breaking it down into small bite-sized pieces, but when are you going to do it? And
so
having that and being able to see that.
I would think that that's especially important for the person who works from home. You know, when you're in the office, there are meetings you have to get to, there are deadlines, there are projects, all of that. When you're at home, and there are eyes on you, so people, again, you know, you're kind of, you know, your behavior is being observed. I would imagine that, you know, working from home, it's even all the more important to really be planful about the day. And the same thing that you said earlier, make sure that you handle, you know, the priority kinds of situations. Is there, in your mind, a difference between, you know, working from home versus working in an office?
Well, I've worked out of my home. Probably I was a pioneer in the home office. I did it when I was an independent contractor for the Chicago Tribune before I started Time Finder, and Time Finder's over 20 years old. So it's a mindset of working from your home, and the mindset really needs to be, when I first started working from my home, I used to get dressed up every day. I'd wear a dress or a skirt. I would, as if I was going right into the office. I needed that mindset for a couple of years. until I got comfortable with my business and what I was doing. But it's all about really looking at your business. Your business is your work. If you're working, you know, have a home office, if you need to be successful and you need to bring in business or you need to deliver to your clients or your customers, it's the same thing. You may have people kind of looking at you, you know, or you see a lot more people when you're in a public type of office, but your strategies need to really be the same. And when you're in a home office, you may have less people coming to your door to interrupt you, so you have the ability to really, truly be more productive. I've had clients say when they're flying on a plane, they are way more productive in 2 hours or 3 hours than they are, you know, sitting right at their desk for 9 hours.
Well, that's right. I watched 3 movies going from L.A. to JFK last night. No, I'm kidding. No, you're right. When I'm on an airplane, I get a whole lot more done. It is annoying, though, that the Wi-Fi, they've actually doubled the price in the last 3 or 4 months on a certain airline. I will not mention that. However, one last thing I wanted to ask you about. I wanted to get your opinion because there's a lot of people think that multitasking, oh, I'm really good at multitasking. I can do 5 things at once. I'm more efficient. I save more time. Mm. What is your view on? I have my view, and you probably know, you can probably guess what it is, but what do you think about that when somebody throws that at you in a coaching situation?
Yeah, you know, multitasking really doesn't work. The only time maybe multitasking might work is if you're like pushing a vacuum cleaner and talking to somebody on the telephone.
Right.
But if you're trying to type something on your, you know, send an email on your computer, but you're talking on the phone, you're going to make a mistake. You're not focusing on what you're doing, or you're not hearing what somebody's asking you to do, and you're going to miss information. And then you're going to have to go back and figure out what it is, what did they say? And you might have to call them again, or you might have to email and say, you know, when we're talking, I kind of, what did you say about doing XYZ? So you have to really look at particular situations where you, quote, can multitask. I think one way to multitask is to delegate effectively. Mm-hmm. And have somebody else doing certain things at the same time something else needs to be done. I mean, you can be printing things out at the same time you're working on a proposal. That's sort of, you can consider that somewhat multitasking. But as an individual, you need to focus on one thing at a time. And you need to read, you know, if you're reading something, you need to read it. And every time the your email makes a noise or pops up or you get distracted by something, then it takes you like 20 minutes. There's statistics. It takes you 20 minutes to get back to where you were in your thinking when that thing, whatever it is, popped up, or the phone rang, or somebody came to your desk or to your cube and interrupted you. 20 minutes to get back into that thinking. Right. So it really is best if you're trying to work on something where it requires a lot of your mind and focus, to not have your email open, not have your cell phone nearby where you can hear it dinging, or, you know, whatever prompts you to answer it or to listen to or look at an email or a text, and really focus on what you need to focus on. And you will get it done more quickly and you will save more time.
I know that's a leap of faith for a lot of people, but I'm so glad to hear you say that, Mitzi, because I think people fool themselves into thinking that they get more done, but when in fact, I think it's sub-optimization at its worst, because I've seen some real bad mistakes where somebody sends an email or a response to an email without reading the fine print, or they send the email to the wrong person, or they copy it to the wrong person. And then you've got a whole, now you talk about the unexpected, now you've got damage control.
Right.
And again, even at home, you know, when you're trying to multitask, you know, you don't want to be changing try to change the baby's diaper while you're, you know, cutting down a tree. That's an extreme example. But you get the idea that you don't want to do too critical or urgent things that really require, you know, a certain intensity of focus and thought.
You know, I saw, you know, a few weeks ago, this woman was walking down the street, my street. She was walking 2 dogs. She had a baby carriage, and she was on her cell phone. But what she
there
was doing
go.
Was she was meandering out to the center of the street. And it's like,
perfect example.
Wake up. Look at what you're doing. You are putting yourself, this baby, and those dogs at risk, all because you are not focusing on probably the baby and listening. And what you're doing is you're on your cell phone.
Mitzi, thank you so much. Sorry, we're just about ready. We're right up to a break here. But thank you so much for joining us. Mitzi, how can people, you find out more about you and also get a hold of your book?
So they can find out more about me at timefinder.net. And if they go to my website, timefinder.net, they can sign up for my newsletter, and they will instantly, within about 24 hours, get some stress busters. 19 stress busters will be sent to them. The other thing, to get my book, there's a link on my website for that, or to go to Amazon, which is, go to Amazon, and it's there. It's About Time, Transforming Chaos into Calm, A to Z. So my website has the link, and that's probably the best place, timefinder.net.
Well, Mitzi, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and also spending your time with us this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Scott. Take good care.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, time for a break. When we come back, David Palmiter, he's going to help us try to figure out how to respond to some of the holiday stresses right after these messages.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson, in The Sea Around Us, said,
"All at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end."
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth. Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Arvind Vora, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. 'Tis the season to be jolly. No, I'm not going to sing it. Are you jolly? No, I am stressed out. I'm sorry. I've got my work to do. You know, things going on at home. I've got to get my Christmas shopping done. There's just not enough time in the day, and I am just stressed out and frazzled. Well, not 100%, and not, well, yeah, maybe some. I don't know. Listen, we've got to figure this out, folks, because it seems like every time this time of the year rolls around, I think with all of the best intentions, we say, okay, I'm going to definitely get ahead of things. I'm going to start my shopping earlier. Now we're doing it in August, of course, and just not be so stressed out. It's not working. We have, fortunately, on the line today, David Palmiter. He's a professor of psychology and counseling at Marywood University. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to be here.
Please help us. Help me. Help us. let's just start with the holidays. There is a lot of stress around the holiday season. You know, people in general, year-round, have stress. It seems to be more heightened right around this time of the year. Help us. with some tips on how to respond to the holiday stress in particular?
Well, I think the first thing is to avoid Clark Griswold syndrome, what I call
it. Oh, I know Clark.
Yeah, those who haven't, those know Clark would enjoy watching that movie, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. But Clark is a good metaphor, I think, for a lot of traps we can fall into, setting very unrealistic expectations for ourselves. For instance, even what you described in your opening, I mean, it kind of is expected that we're all experiencing more stress because there's more to do on top of our already overstressed lives. So and one of the things that Clark does, for instance, when it comes to the specific holiday days, is it creates very unrealistic, idealistic expectations, puts a great deal of energy into setting up the structure for nirvana. And then inevitably, when nirvana doesn't occur, there's tremendous frustration, anxiety, anger over the fact that, wow, we couldn't deliver heaven on earth after all, because we're human.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that too, because, you know, Clark, and if we, let's, you know, continue with the National Lampoon's Christmas, you know, Clark, it was coming from the heart. He was trying to please everybody and make everything nice. And it actually reminds me growing up, with my dad, you know, he would want to, you know, the food to be just right. And really, it was really, you know, again, from the heart, wanting to have it nice for everybody. But then invariably it would end up where, you know, he would be so stressed out that the result was not, the outcome was not what was hoped for or expected. So what do we do? How do we, you know, how do we begin to change those, some of those habits?
Well, first by realizing, like Dirty Harry would say, a man's got to know his limitations. I think we have to be aware of the fact that we can't do everything. And sometimes kind declines to invitations for our time or resources is an act of self-love. I think after we also want to really, it bears saying about another 12 times, Scott, to really not be unrealistic in our expectations. We're going to be stressed. Things, the turkey's going to fall on the floor. Uncle Bob's going to get drunk. The tree's going to fall over. We're right in the middle of kids opening up their presents. And that's just part of being in the human condition, right? So there's the inherent stress, but then there's additional stress we heap onto ourselves when we tell ourselves we're screw-ups when these things inevitably happen.
And I think also maybe it's unrealistic to think that things are going to go perfectly. Now you're reminding me of another great Christmas classic, A Christmas Story, you know, yes. Little Ralphie, and then when the dogs come in and eat the turkey. But I think, you know, to be, I do think we set ourselves up because we, you know, things don't go perfectly. Things aren't going to always go the way we plan. And so we, in a way, we set ourselves up to be a little bit more stressed and frustrated. And of course, that has a domino effect.
Absolutely. And let's take that Christmas Story example, because that teaches another good principle from positive psychology, a field that offers us a great deal of information about how to be happy. And that is crisis equals pain plus opportunity. So when something like the dogs eating the turkey happened in that movie, notice what happens afterwards. That family is a very resilient response. They look for the opportunity. They have that meal in the Chinese restaurant and have created a memory that will live with them for the rest of their lives. And these pains that occur to us, they're like dragons guarding treasure. And the dragon has to have its way. We have to experience the pain. But usually the treasure is at least equal to the amount of pain and often far exceeds it and continues to give well after the pain has stopped.
No, those are, again, because these are real good nuggets here, and I want to just remind folks that, number one, because I think a lot of us don't want to say no. Everybody feels obligated. In fact, I was with a client last week, and they were going to back-to-back, you know, holiday, Christmas parties, things like that, and it was totally stressful. And, you know, look, I think what you're saying, David, is, you know, sometimes you say no, but I like what you said. You said kind declines. So, you know, I'd love to do lunch or the dinner or the party, but unfortunately, you know, we've got whatever. Just, you know, thank you so much for thinking of us. And just really leave it at that. You know, why pile that stress on? And then don't be unrealistic. So I think those are two fantastic tips that I hope people will heed.
Well, you know, I think we ought to keep in mind, what does high road life look like? I think we sometimes have false images of what high road life looks like. Everything's all tidied and the T's dotted and the I's crossed. High road life is a bumbling and tumbling cacophony of mess, joy, laughter, tears, exhaustion. Show me someone who has everything between the lines, all buttoned up and zipped up and tidy, and I'll show you a life that's not on the high road. So one of the ways that we can differentiate that sort of high road chaos from chaos that's more toxic is how much of our activities are consistent with the things that matter the most to us. This is why developing both vocational and personal mission statements can be very helpful. Stephen Covey is, and his company have tremendous resources available out there for figuring out what are the top things that I want to invest in, and then to say yes to those things and no to the things that maybe don't. Another way to consider that more simply is to look at a particular question from the context of a deathbed. When I'm on my deathbed and I'm looking back at this moment, what choice would I have wanted myself to make? What would be the thing that would be most consistent with what matters most to me? Because, Scott, we have two lists in our lives. We have the list of how we spend our time, and then we have the list of what matters to us. And the more those lists are different, the more I'm probably feeling frustrated and empty and what's wrong. And the more those lists look alike, the more I'm leading a life lavish with meaning and rich with purpose. I'm not going to the grave with the song still in me, as Thoreau wrote, but instead I'm feeling like I'm on the high road. But that is not a neat thing. That is a messy, tumbling, bumbling cacophony of all kinds of negative experiences sometimes, as well as the joy and the enrichment.
And so just really acknowledging that, and I love the idea, again, between, you know, thinking about what is important to you, what matters to you, and making sure that the things that we do day to day, that there's a, I use the word congruency, it's more like fit, there's a nice tight fit between the two, and
absolutely,
I think the closer the fit, I think the, and I think also you touch on something else that's important, that life is not just about, you know, one happy, blissful, you know, continuous experience. No, you know, things are going to happen. And you mentioned the positive psychology. It's really, okay, well, how do we react and respond to things that, you know, that, hey, you know, let's get over it. That's just part of life, right?
Exactly. And another thing is avoiding overspending. I think we parent lunatics, and by the way, I always use the term parent lunatic instead of parent, because the love we have with our kids makes us crazy people. I think we parent lunatics imagine that the more we spend, the more joy we're going to inculcate into our children. And actually, money and happiness have a very poor correlation. It's more those experiences of meaning, that one-on-one time, those special shared rituals that we do together, which don't require money. If I got it and I spend it, fine. But if I don't got it and I spend it, I'm more likely to end up parenting from the cross. And that is a terrible parenting methodology.
What do you mean parenting from the cross?
Where everything's going to the kids. Everything's going to the kids. And it's kind of like when you're traveling on an airline and the oxygen mask drop. They say put it on yourself first if you're traveling with a child and then your kid. What good am I if I'm woozy and passing out? And we parents sometimes are martyrs when it comes to our family life. You know, everything's on the kids. I don't even begin to think about my own wellness or the relationship that I'm in with my significant other. It's all on the kids. And anything that's left, the scraps that are left, and often there aren't even that I'll give to myself in our relationship. And that's parenting from the cross. And think about someone trying to be on a cross and doing parenting. I mean, it's just versus someone who's on a high road who values their own self-care and their relationship care as another important thing in addition to the parenting agenda.
I think that's an excellent point. And I think I find, especially with single parents and in divorce situations where there's a little bit of guilt, or maybe a lot of bit of guilt, that where the parent feels that, okay, I can buy, you know, if the more stuff I buy for my kid, the less guilty I feel and the better they're going to feel. And I agree with you that simply doesn't work. And especially as we think about, you know, whether, again, whether regardless of your religious faith, but, you know, many for Hanukkah and Christmas especially, you know, we feel obligated to buy lots of stuff. Years ago, my wife and I decided, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. We're just going to kind of cut back and we're going to really focus on other things, you know, connecting, you know, maybe having a nice, we started a ritual, a family ritual where we do a dinner, just us, and we'll go out to a nice place and just, and that started 10 years ago. Now the kids are grown and they still look forward to that. So I think it's fantastic.
It's not a deprivation. It's a redirecting to something more enriching.
Yeah, yeah. Now we've got a couple of minutes left. You participated in the Stress in America study, And if you could just kind of highlight, what were a couple of the key findings in that study?
Well, this is an annual survey done by the American Psychological Association, and it's done out of an act of kindness and generosity because it's just a pro bono activity. And one of the findings is that when adults are asked over the past 5 years, how has your stress been? About three quarters report that their stress has either stayed the same or increased.
Mm.
And among teens, about a third of them report that their stress has increased in the past year. And adults and teens both rate their stress levels to be higher than they believe is healthy. They also don't believe that they're managing their stress very well and report that sometimes they don't do the things that they know would be helpful for managing stress and instead find themselves falling into certain traps.
So how long has this study been going on? You said it's done over a year.
It's been done every year. I'm not exactly sure the year it started. I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago, but that's a guess on my part.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, though, and at least I'll tell you from my perspective, and this is just based on being out there in the world and reading and looking at surveys and certain research, where it does seem like instead of stress being on the decrease, it's actually increasing, and that's across the board. And we're seeing that, you know. So, what's the result of that? Well, you're seeing, you know, higher rates of suicide, I believe. I think you're seeing higher rates of kids abusing, you know, people abusing, you know, substances, alcohol. You're seeing this in the increase in, you know, medication, for example, because it manifests in so many ways. Is there some validity to that impression?
There is. I think our culture gives a lot of wrong messages about what promotes happiness. When you look at the science on that, about half of our happiness is attributable to our temperament, you know, the kind of the personality we were born with. Mm. Only 10%, however, is circumstances. And we all tend to way overestimate how much our circumstances, you know, whether I have a job I like, whether my wife has cancer, those things only account for about 10%. Mm. The other 40% is our intentional behavior, the choices we make. And positive psychology has a lot to teach about what we can do with that. I think we don't think proactively. Often if we're on a high road, we might think proactively about our physical activity. Okay, what's my physical activity plan or my diet plan? We need to think about our happiness plan. What are the things that we're doing? For example, one of the things that can be very nice to do during the holidays is to embrace gratitude. To write a gratitude letter to each other. Every member of the family rotates, you know, today's Dad's Day. Other people write a 300-word handwritten letter, read it to Dad, give it to him. I have that full methodology on my blog, how to do that. But that's an example of one of the techniques from positive psychology, consistently practicing gratitude, that really does promote resilience and keep some of these toxic effects you just reviewed from taking us over.
David, the time went too fast. We're going to wrap up. How could people get more information? You have so much good literature and other material that you've published. How can people get a hold of that?
Hecticparents.com is probably the best place.
That's easy to remember. Hecticparents.com. David, thank you so much for being a part of the show. And thank you all for joining us. You've been listening to The Business of Living. Be sure to join us next week.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Living. Please join Scott Ventrella for another edition of the show next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you here next Saturday.